It's time for the truth without the spin, bias, and political correctness. Get that every day at dnewman.org. Here's your host, Dan Newman.
I want to say a hearty hello to everybody today and welcome you to today's broadcast at dnewman.org. Today is Thursday, the 10th of May. Boy, the year is flying by. The spring is flying by and we're looking down the throat of summertime already. And it is hot everywhere, especially in Washington, D.C. We have three special stories that we want to talk about in detail on our show today. Three, and let's get right to it. The first one, the big one on everybody's mind this week, the president made a determination to pull the United States out of the Iran deal. And of course, the talking heads are going absolutely nuts. And a reminder, the talking heads are not all Democrats. They're not all liberals. There's a bunch of talking heads on the Republican side of the aisle that are also, along with their Democrat cohorts, and of course, almost all the media, are calling the president misguided and other adjectives for pulling the United States out of the agreement. A lot of reasons for it, but I've got some questions. I've got six questions that I'd like to pose to you while you're considering to develop your opinion about the president's opinion in doing so. First question, think about this now. Remember, the United States paid Iran, not all of the other countries. And that's the question here. The United States, and I'm answering the question actually before I ask it to you, but that $150 billion paid, the last $500 million or so paid in cash, made up equally by euros and Swiss francs. How much of that money paid to Iran as the initiating element of this deal? How much of that money was paid by countries, other countries, in the Iran nuclear deal? Question number two. Isn't it true that the United States House of Representatives is responsible for initiating all U.S. government spending measures? How could a president, and in this case, President Obama, spend that kind of money, $150 million, legally, with no congressional oversight? Think about it, folks. This was not congressional action. President Obama actually sent an issue, a question, through his Democrats in Congress to have Congress in the Senate, specifically because if a treaty comes up, all treaties have to be confirmed by the U.S. Senate. This should have been a treaty. A treaty means the United States as a country is bound to the terms of that treaty because the American people's representatives, the U.S. Senate, have confirmed that treaty that was negotiated, every treaty we have, by the U.S. president at the time. That's binding on subsequent presidents, and you don't see getting in and then getting out. President Obama polled Congress informally and saw that the Senate was not going to confirm a treaty with the terms of the Iran deal. So he decided to pull out his pen. Remember, he told everybody he's got a cell phone and a pen. It's all he needs to govern. And decided to do it by executive order. And doing that agreement with executive order meant that the president of the United States, with no legal authority, and I'm not an attorney, but I do understand that presidents can't just go out and spend $150 billion without having legally, legitimately, without having some authorization. That's exactly what President Obama did, and nobody said a word. Yes, the Iran deal, part of our question number three, was really a treaty, but it was not approved by the Senate. So what was going on in the White House and in the State Department with John Kerry when all of this was happening? Anytime you see large amounts of money changing hands, and you see that money changing hands and it's not being done where everybody can see, especially when it's taxed out. Think about it, folks. What could we have done with an extra $150 billion? Do the math. I'll tell you what we'll do. On tomorrow's show, we'll break it down and tell you what we could have done. We'll come up with several things that we could have done for the American people, those folks that paid that $150 billion, what we could have done instead of throwing it away, giving it to Iran so that they could fund terrorism in a bigger way, they could continue their program of development of intercontinental ballistic missiles, even though supposedly in the deal they would not be able to tip those missiles with nuclear warheads. Of course, that's a whole nother story. Funding Hezbollah and in Lebanon, that is sitting right next door to Israel and are constantly attacking in all kinds of ways the nation of Israel. We give them $150 billion, basically a blank check, and said, go do what you want to with it. Why do you think they wanted that half a billion, that final amount of that $150 billion? Why do you think they wanted it in cash? No paper trail. They wanted half of it in euros and half of it in Swiss francs. Over there, the U.S. dollar doesn't really work well in a lot of countries. I'm telling you, in Northern Europe, they're not crazy about doing work for U.S. dollars. I know. I couldn't get a cab to take any kind of U.S. dollars, $20 bill, $10 bill, nothing from me. In Northern Italy, I went to a money exchange place, storefront exchange place, where they take all kinds of money and exchange it for whatever you want. They would not cash a $100 bill from me for euros in Northern Italy. So you want to do business behind the scenes, you need cash. In Europe, if you want to do business, in the Middle East, if you want to do business in cash, euros and Swiss francs are going to work. Swiss francs are backed by gold now. Question number four, how could any free nation ever believe that Iran would honor any commitment they made to halt production of nuclear weapons? Why would they stop? Who are we? They're a sovereign nation. Who are we, the United States of America? And yes, we have partners in the deal. You know, we had the UK and we had France and we had Germany. What authority do we have to tell a sovereign country they can't do anything? And yes, believe me, I don't want any country. I don't like the idea of Pakistan, of India, having nuclear weapons. I'm just not crazy about it. You get a nutcase that goes over there, it's too easy for some despot to gain control of a country and go willy-nilly and lobbing nukes everywhere towards us, ending life as we know it. There's just too much that can happen. Think about Iran. Even as nutty as their political powerhouse structure at the top is, who are we to tell them that they can't develop nuclear weapons? We can negotiate with them in good faith, reach a deal. Negotiation means you come up successfully in a negotiation where terms of it are good for one side, and they're good for the other side. Everybody's got to come to the table. Everybody's got to be honest and forthright and forthcoming with details and information. That didn't happen with Iran. But still, we're not able. We don't have authority to make a country do something just because we're the United States of America. And so we played heavy-handed with them. We tried to buy them off. That's exactly what it is. The bully on the schoolyard goes out looking for Milky Way and Snickers candy bars from little kids every day on the playground, and they'll go up and bully them. And so Iran is the bully of the Middle East, and we're trying to bully them, which is their game. It isn't going to work. It didn't work, and it's not going to work. Question number five, how stupid was the Obama administration to accept inspectors in that deal, that they would not be allowed, the inspectors, to look at Iran's military bases when they did their inspections, knowing that when previous uranium enrichment happened in Iran, it was happening on those military bases. Now, If you're not a physicist or a chemist, you may not know this, but you can move stuff around. When you're doing uranium enrichment, you can take all the equipment out. You can clean up the area where nobody can see that anything was done. But the one thing you can't remove is the evidence of there being uranium, enriched uranium at that spot. You've seen the Geiger counters and all the clicking thing that goes on when it gets in close proximity to some uranium or radiation left by uranium. That's what they're trying to do, is hide the fact, at least in my mind, that not only was uranium enrichment happening on those military bases, if they're going to do it behind the scenes and try to hide it from us, that's where they're going to do it. I mean, they've been doing it there for years. So how would we trust them? How would John Kerry, then Secretary of State, President Obama, how would he trust them? Why would they trust them and agree, yeah, we're going to give you all this money. We're going to let you do whatever you're going to do. We're going to believe you when you tell us that you're not enriching uranium. You're not developing nuclear bombs. But we know you did it over there before. We're just going to take your word for it that you're not doing it there anymore. Makes absolutely no sense. And the other big one we mentioned briefly was, why did we pay that final $500 million to Iran in cash? I just can't get around that. Folks, cash is an underground economy. It's hard to track. And that's exactly why Iran wanted to be paid in cash, was because it is hard to track around. And they definitely did not want the United Nations, any of our partners over there, or us, to find out if and what was going on those military bases and elsewhere when inspectors came in. We got a lot more to talk about. Some good economic news, some great economic news, some of the best in the history of the United States. You probably haven't heard about it because it's good news. And it's good news that comes mostly responsible to President Donald Trump, so you understand why you're not hearing about it. That's all just ahead. Sit tight.
Brooke Ellison is a surprising person.
When I was 11 years old, I was hit by a car, and no one expected me to live.
She surprised people by living.
I've been paralyzed from the neck down and on a ventilator since that time.
And she surprised them by going to college.
Tomorrow, I will graduate from Harvard.
Brooke Ellison!
Determination. Pass it on. From the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
Hey, Thirst, can I try out a few Coke Summer sound effects on you?
Yes.
Cool. You okay with this?
Yes.
And this?
Yes.
And what about this? Gotcha there, Thirst. That wasn't sound effects. That was a Coke.
I'm no longer thirsty.
You're so out of here.
Coca-Cola, open happiness.
Don't ever miss a story or podcast. Get an email link to every new story and podcast by entering your email address on the homepage of dnewman.org. If it's relevant, you'll get it here.
Nothing today or any day but relevant news with factual information and factual questions. Second segment of today's show, good news. The federal government took in a record tax haul in April en route to its biggest ever monthly budget surplus. That's according to the Congressional Budget Office, as a surging economy left Americans with more money in our paychecks. And this means more to pay to Uncle Sam. All told, do the math. The government collected $515 billion, spent $297 billion for a total monthly surplus of just a little over $200 billion, $218 billion left in the bank after we paid our bills. That swamped the previous monthly record that had been set back in 2001. It was $190 billion there. CBO analysts were surprised by the surplus, to say the least. They had expected there would have been a surplus, but this was $40 billion more than they guessed was going to come out left in the bank after the bills were paid when they prepared that estimate about a month before. Analysts said they'll have a better idea of what's behind that surge as more information rolls in, but it looks like individual taxpayers are paying more because they have higher incomes. Duh. Those payments were mostly related to economic activity in 2017 and may reflect stronger than expected income growth in that year. The analysts said in their monthly budget review, this is per the Washington Times. It's mostly conservative, well, sometimes conservative, much more conservative than the Washington Post, but you don't get a lot of good stuff out of them. Part of the strength, their story continues, and receipts also may reflect larger than anticipated payments for economic activity in 2018. The reasons for the added revenues will be better understood as more detailed information becomes available later this year. Official numbers are due out from the Treasury Department in just a few days, but the CBO is usually accurate to within a couple of billion dollars with a B. April is always a strong month for government finances. Of course, it's tax time. Taxpayers are filing their returns for the previous year, settling up what they owe, even as expenditures often dip for the month. But this year was particularly strong, with receipts jumping 13% compared to a year ago. The news couldn't come at a better time for President Trump, boy, as congressional Republicans who were facing major questions about the damage that last year's tax cut package might do to future deficits. Nobody knew what was going to happen. Everybody thought money's going to go down, budget deficit's going to widen. Well, just a month ago, the CBO projected the deficit would quickly soar back to $1 trillion a year. And we just picked up an extra $218 billion of that. So if we can continue that trend, we may be able to bust even this year. So far, 7 months into fiscal year 2018, the government is running a $382 billion deficit. That's $37 billion worse than last year's number through 7 months, chiefly because spending has surged 5% so far this year. And originally, it was assumed that revenue, because of the tax cuts, would be way, 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 way down. This number, folks, confirms what free market capitalists have always said about taxes, including John F. Kennedy when he was president. He said, you lower taxes on Americans, tax revenues will go up because people will spend that money that they keep in their pockets. And when somebody makes a dollar, they're going to spend that dollar with someone else. That person is going to spend that dollar with someone else, and so on and so on. They say it rolls over anywhere from 5 to 10 times. And everybody that gets it, when they get it, they got to pay tax on it. So revenues go up proportionately anytime taxes are reduced. Proof here from the Congressional Budget Office, who is sometimes pretty negative about conservative actions. And of course, congressional Democrats are crying now how unreliable the Congressional Budget Office is with their projections. And of course, normally they're just all over about how great they are. Part three of this show today, the information we want to bring to you, and it's almost like no news story, nothing we talk about, nothing anybody can talk about in politics in the United States nowadays can leave out the Robert Mueller Russian collusion story. Former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani, you know, he's now on President Trump's legal team, told CBS News correspondent Paula Reed on Monday that special counsel Robert Mueller's office has rejected proposals to allow the president to answer questions from investigators in writing. Everybody thought that was going to be the best way to do it, that for time, for accuracy, And giving Mr. Mueller a chance to get all the information he needs, documentation that he may not have, in writing would be the best way. The president's legal team, however, has signaled this would be their preferred format, the written, for a possible interview, since it helps protect the president from the possibility of lying or misleading investigators, which is a criminal offense. And of course, with a special investigator, special prosecutor, folks, you don't have to lie. You just have to slip up and misstate something from before, and they're going to try to entrap you, and they can entrap, the special prosecutor can entrap legally. At some later point, I'm going to talk to you about my feelings about that particular law in the U.S. justice system. I think we need to do away with that special prosecutor because it's being used to weaponize political people for specific political agendas. I didn't like the Ken Starr, Bill Clinton, Whitewater investigation. It started as looking into financial dealings for a large real estate development deal that went south in the state of Arkansas that the Clintons, both the president and Hillary, were involved in. And it ended up with impeachment because the president couldn't keep his pants zipped up in the Oval Office. Had nothing to do with what Ken Starr was brought in to do as a special prosecutor. Anyway, back to President Trump. Giuliani told CBS News it'll take up to 3 weeks for him to get fully up to speed on the facts of the investigation and be prepared to engage in formal negotiations with the special counsel about the terms of a possible interview with Trump. Giuliani told Reed that he and the president's legal team continue to be in communication with the special counsel, but that he wants to have a better sense of the facts before engaging in formal negotiations about a possible interview. Giuliani, remember he's former New York City mayor, said that Mr. Trump's team also wants some issues to be off limits, although he wouldn't elaborate on which ones, and they want a time limit for the interview. What wouldn't be appropriate for the Mueller team to get into with the president of the United States based on this entire investigation? You know, this boy from the South thinks that it was all about Russian collusion. So I would think that anything doesn't have anything to do with Russia or Russian collusion should not take up the president's time. He is trying to run a country, doing a pretty darn good job doing it, but he doesn't need to waste a bunch of time for a needless witch hunt by a special prosecutor. In addition, Giuliani also told Reed he'd want to know whether the interview would become public and whether they would have the chance to issue a rebuttal to anything alleged by the special counsel. If they can come to an agreement on the terms of an interview, Giuliani says he would like to wait until after the North Korea summit to prepare the president for that. In the middle of all of this, leaked stories, and I know you can't believe that there are leaks in Washington, D.C., and surely can't believe that out of the special counsel's camp, some news would leak out or fake news. We don't know yet, but it has been leaked today that it is a possibility that Mueller's going to go ahead and just subpoena the president to testify before a grand jury. Won't that be special? Of course, this investigation rolls on and on and on, and I don't know when or if we'll ever get to the bottom of it and see it go away having all the facts on the table. We, of course, will keep you posted on any developments on the Mueller investigation, and we know there's a bunch of stuff going on behind the scenes, so I'm sure there'll be more on the president testifying here shortly. One extra thing I want to throw in here today is the confirmation hearings that have been taking place in the Senate for the CIA director nominee, Haspel, Gina Haspel. If you get a chance, you need to listen to as much of, it's kind of lengthy, but listen to part of the confirmation hearing that took place with U.S. senators today. And Gina Haspel, if you don't know who she is, she's a lifer in the CIA. She served in many, many various and different departments. She is, without question, the most qualified person in the history of CIA directors or potential CIA directors. Everybody likes her. Two of my least favorite people ever in the intelligence community, James Clapper and John Brennan. John Brennan, former CIA director, was Haspel's boss. they both are all in recommending that the Senate confirm Gina Haspel to direct the CIA, saying there's nobody as qualified, nobody better to take that position. Yet, in this hearing, I have never in my life seen anything so nasty, so mean by one side or the other. The Democrats just took the entire hearing, every question that they asked, every time any one of them had the floor to get involved in a question of the nominee, they just went nuts. And the primary thing they harped on was the waterboarding that was put in place during the Bush administration right after 9/11. And three different people were waterboarded and tortured. But before any of it was done, it was ruled by multiple legal officials and government officials and attorneys and the Justice Department that that type of interrogation was legal. Since then, a law has been put in place by Congress that makes it not legal to torture. And there was a lot of discussion when all this process was being developed and this law was being written of the use of the term torture. When you say waterboard, if you're not familiar with what it is, they will take a prisoner, somebody they're interrogating, put a cloth or a towel over their face where they can't see, lay them back and pour gallons of water on their faces and continue to do it. And then obviously the sensation of drowning is what the prisoner or that person being interrogated experiences. And then they try to get them to talk and give them the information that they need. It sounds horrible. I've seen it demonstrated. It definitely is something that I don't want to live through. But you got to remember what had just happened. 3,000 Americans were slaughtered by airplanes that flew into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. And then one plane crashed in a field in Pennsylvania that was headed for the Capitol. So whoever did that, we needed to find out. And if you can't get somebody to do it in normal interrogation, the decision was made to use waterboarding to help get that information. And Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who was one of the architects along with Osama bin Laden in waterboarding, gave up the name and the contact information for someone very close to Obama. And CIA officials say that waterboarding was instrumental in making that happen. All that being said, those Democrats today were crushing the nominee in her about her role in waterboarding. She had nothing to do with it. She wasn't even in that part of the CIA for a year after it was begun, instituted, and put in operation. She was not a CIA director. She had a supervisory position at the time, and she's now, right now, under President Trump, pending her hopeful nomination being approved to be the CIA director. She's a deputy director. There is no director right now. And so they would not let her respond. She would try to explain. They would say over and over again, Kamala Harris, senator from California that everybody is certain is going to run for Democrat nomination for president in 2020, would not let Ms. Haspel answer a full question. And here was the question that kept being asked by everybody on the left and Kamala Harris to the nominee. In your opinion, is torture / waterboarding immoral? Not illegal. They wanted to know, in her opinion, if it was immoral. She made it clear over and over and over again that on her watch, waterboarding at the CIA would never be allowed. That was not good enough. She made it very clear that when those in the CIA conducted it, it had been adjudicated by everybody short of the U.S. Supreme Court in the Justice Department, that it was legal. She was an employee. She wasn't even doing waterboarding when that happened. She didn't do waterboarding herself, period. But that wasn't good enough. The bottom line is, folks, it has nothing to do with Gina Haspel being qualified to be director of the CIA. There can only be two things it deals with. Number one, President Trump nominated her. And let me give you an example that kind of clears that up. Her boss, former boss, John Brennan, director of the CIA, appointed by President Obama, almost unanimous confirmation by Congress. John Brennan was never asked in his confirmation hearings any questions like Ms. Haspel has been asked. Yet, you know what? He was in management and was responsible for the waterboarding that took place. Why was he not questioned the same way Ms. Haspel was today? President Obama nominated him. He was a Democrat. The hypocrisy there is incredible. So for political reasons, that's one possible reason for them being so nasty to the nominee today. And if she's not confirmed, I will on this show and in writing on this blog, I will say that it's probably because she's a woman. And think about that. Republicans, almost en masse, are supportive of Ms. Haspel. There are some, the Never Trumpers, again, primarily because Trump nominated her. They don't want her to be in office. So they're not in full support at this moment for her becoming director of the CIA. But when you have somebody that many experts have confirmed is in all of the world, in the United States, is the most qualified person to lead the CIA, people that know, that have no political agenda, they just know they're concerned about the CIA having the best person running it as possible. And then half of Congress is looking for reasons that have nothing to do with capability, with history, with knowledge, with expertise. Has nothing to do with that, whether or not they'll confirm that person. It has to do with only one thing, or maybe two things. One being their political perspective, and she's a woman. There's never been a CIA director that was a female, never been one nominated. Not only is she a woman, she's the most qualified person to hold that job. So which is it, Democrats? Chuck Schumer? You supported John Brennan. You don't support Gina Haspel. John Brennan was over the waterboarding that you so despise and that you cry out against Ms. Haspel about. So are you a sexist, sir? Do we need to get the women's activist on your tail because you don't support a woman to be director of the CIA? Folks, that's going to wrap it up for today. Thank you for joining us as always. We love visiting with you. We love your being a part of this. And as you know, we want to hear from you. Let us know what you think on every topic. You can post it or you can send me an email at dan@dnewman.org. You have a great day. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
I stay out too late. Got nothing in my brain. That's what people say.